Good morning, and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Community Conversations, now playing in the morning show time slot, and occasionally live hosted by Julie Calamine, who's with me on the recording today as my co-host. This is Phil Huff, back after a week off. I'm not even sure where I was last week. It was so crazy busy, but thank you for filling in solo, Julie.
It was no problem, Phil, although I will tell you, I missed you. I mentioned before we came on air that I really had some work to do. I'm so used to you being such a great co-host that I really had my work cut out for me. I'm so happy to have you back.
It always takes, thank you. It takes a lot of focus to be a solo interviewer. I think I was busy one of those days. It seemed to rain a lot, which we're always excited about when we've come through a dry summer. And yet there we were over the weekend up in Libby, Montana for the Kootenai Harvest Festival. Rained off and on all day and still 500 people came out. I think it tells you how cooped up people are with this COVID thing and just how important our parks and recreation infrastructure is to us right now more than ever.
Yes, as we're getting outside more after the smoke and the heat is lessening. And Phil, what a great lead-in, because that is our topic this week. And we are going to be able to meet the newly hired Parks Planning and Development Manager, Maeve Nevins-Lautar. Hello, Maeve.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
We're so happy to have you and nice to be meeting you on via Zoom. And with her is Kim Woodruff. Kim, you are the Parks and Rec Director here in Sandpoint. Hello, Kim.
Hello, and glad to be here, both Julie and Phil. Thanks for the invitation.
Yes, Kim, it's so nice to have you back, Kim. It's great to have you always. And Maeve, this is your first time. So we want to learn more about you. And so far, word about your arrival is spread throughout the community as the woman from Alaska. But fill in the rest of the details.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for the warm welcome to you and everyone from this community. I'm originally actually from Vermont. I was raised in Vermont, New Hampshire, and spent some time going to college in Colorado and spent about 20 years in Colorado working in the realm of landscape architecture and outdoor recreation, basically building from literally, I actually built roads and trails. I was on construction crews, and then I finally got a degree in landscape architecture and worked in the resort world, designing and building ski resorts and mountain communities. And then most recently, I've spent the last almost just shy of 10 years up in Alaska working for the city of Anchorage as their senior park planner. And pretty much it's a very similar job as this one is here in Sandpoint, but a much larger community. It's a community of a city of 300,000 versus our 8,000 here in Sandpoint. But some similarities are they're both mountain communities with large bodies of water. Both communities highly value their access to public lands and their access to the outdoors. And I think that a lot of the people that live in both towns both have a passion for recreating, and they like to live, work, and play where they live and where they work. So it's that very holistic lifestyle and that get outdoors community that I love working in and I'm passionate about.
Well, we're very happy to have you in this new position. And why don't you just take a moment and tell us what sort of work that's going to be for you here? What sort of things will you be thinking about and working on?
Sure. Well, to start off with, the community has done a fabulous job of completing their park and recreation and open space master plan. And that was just approved in 2020. I believe it was August of 2020 that it was approved by the city council. And I will be part of the implementation of that master plan. And so my role will be to take the master plan, which is a very high level way of designing, and it identifies the community priorities for this park property, and then implementing that into more detailed design, and from that distilling it further down, working with the community on those individual designs. And so there's several projects that are embedded in each of those master plans. There's three big ones, the City Beach Park, and then the Downtown Waterfront area, I would say, you know, the park trail system, and then the Traverse Centennial sports complex. And so those are the three big ones that I'll be implementing right away. But there's also the Sand Creek watershed. And there's several other capital improvement projects that are also on my plate. There's a few maintenance projects, and there's talk of a new dog park down by Memorial Fields and Lakeview Park. Is it, correct. Am I saying it correctly? Yeah. Sorry, I'm still learning all my park names, and everyone has at least one or three park names for each park here, so bear with me. So there's a lot of really fun new park projects that I'll be implementing that does include trails, you know, both mountain bike and multi-purpose trails, and we're looking at implementing the non-motorized transportation plan and different plans that the city has recently approved. So all of that sort of overlaps with park property and the trails and recreation.
So I know you're coming in at the implementation phase, and that's a pretty exciting juncture, but the park planning process, this revision master plan, strategic plans, have been going on some time. Maeve, whether it's you or maybe Kim, can you reflect a little bit on what everyone went through to bring that process together?
Yes, and actually our city administrator,
Jennifer Staples
has just arrived. She just came in from a meeting and she's sitting next to me. So I'm going to let her answer that question.
Okay. Fabulous.
Say hello, Jennifer Stapleton, city administrator. Thank you for joining us here on KRFY.
Thank you for having me as part of this discussion too. And I'm going to start this off and then obviously hand it over to Kim, our Parks and Recreation Director. I handle a lot of the community outreach side of it, so I'll speak to that and hand him the rest on the master planning. So the City Council adopted our Parks and Recreation Master Plan back in early fall of 2020.
When we adopted it?
Yeah.
In August 2020.
2020, yes, that's... with COVID, we forget our timelines around here.
Yes.
That's the world we all live in. Was it pre-COVID, after COVID? So, and that was after about an 18-month public process. And I would say our most robust public outreach and participation process probably that we've had here at the city. We had multiple community meetings that were attended by 100 plus community members. We held those meetings at the Hive. We had day long workshops at City Hall. And then in addition to that, we had key stakeholder and interest group interviews, and the master plan and the concepts within the master plan came to City Council in workshop format on a couple of different occasions, followed by presentations and further discussion on those. So this was multiple times and going before the public and City Council. And we incorporated the site concepts in the master plan so that as we were moving forward to implementation, we had a shared community vision. And most importantly, with that shared community vision, it gives us the opportunity to leverage funding from outside sources. So that having shovel-ready projects and a shared community vision is really key to being able to implement. And I'll let Kim talk a little bit more about history of kind of parks planning and the importance of this.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. And that was a great intro to the parks planning process. What's unique about our parks plan versus other parks plan that I've been involved with is that we took a fresh approach to say what would happen if we looked at all of our public space as if it were blank. How could we go in and maximize our efficiencies, our service, and our benefit to our community and not come in with preconceived because things are here or there already? And so that really was a fresh look and an opportunity, and especially for someone who's been here for as long as I have, which is a long time, And some of the ideas that came out of there were quite shocking for me even at first. For example, at our city beach, when we came in looking at relocating our boat launch, where the RV park is, that kind of set that whole property swap between that and where the Edgewater Resort is, my first reaction is like, yeah, right, that'll ever happen. But then by coming in with outside people and outside professionals, the landscape architect in this effort actually was Dell Hatch, who was a local Sandpoint person that's gone on with his training and has worked a lot in the inland Northwest, but still coming in and looking at how we could maximize. So through consolidation and looking at really what our services are, what our properties are, position ourselves for economic drivers, passive recreation for our locals and serving our local people. And I think that's the big takeaway for me is really this is focused on how we can best service our citizens of Sandpoint. So sometimes this and we're a tourist town and we do all these things to cater. And I've been here for a long time and I've heard that. Reality is, yes, we are a tourist town, but our decisions that we make, every decision that I make as a Parks and Recreation Director is based on how we can best serve our citizens. Those 8,000 people are the ones that I work for and serve. And so truly, even with this and the 1% as we go down the line, that's what's driving everything we have. And again, the biggest takeaway for me is to position ourselves for the next 50 plus years. And that's my vision and my hope.
That's great to hear, Kim. And I'm so happy to hear that the residents are a priority. But recreation does have a value, an economic value, because of folks that come to the area, and enhancing that, of course, is going to help the city economically, I'm sure.
So, and again, that's when you look at some of those waterfront plans for the Farman's Landing area and our city beach and the open space and the ability to have events down there and drive our downtown economy. We can have it all. We truly can have that in a sustainable and ongoing and efficient manner. So again, it's a yes, we are a tourist economy and we embrace that, but we can have it all by thinking it out and planning for it and then going forward that way. So
keep all of the Parks and Recreation master plan and consideration in all four of the site concepts was economic vitality.
I think it brings up a really interesting intersection, though, between infrastructure and the economy, which there can be an obvious linkage between the attractiveness of an area and new people wanting to move here and the attractiveness of the waterfront property to businesses and potential events and activities that are economic drivers. And yet there's a whole range, too, of projects and programs that Park and Recreation have that rely on the recreation side of the component sustained by the infrastructure. I'd love to delve a little bit into how the master plan interfaces with not just the infrastructure, but the programmatic activity.
I think a perfect example was one of the in our plan identified was Memorial Field. Perfect example. And that's where we went in with our first 1% tax on a 5-year sunset. And we're able to come in and deliver and over-deliver on what we had presented to our community. And that what that has purchased in a nutshell for me is the refurbish of our stadium that those of us who have been here for a while remember we were half condemned and then kind of bought some time by patching it together. So we've totally replaced that on a newer version that looks like the old one, which was interesting. It was way cool. That we were able to do that. And now we have a turf and play service that we can actually have spring sports. And so what we bought in for our community and especially our kids are 2 months of play that did not exist because of the artificial turf. Our natural turf here is quite unique in that we're in the basin where the big dam broke up in Clark Fork and our soils are not permeable. And so they can be playing up in Bonner's Ferry or Coeur d'Alene, whereas right now, and for all these years, we have not been able to do, and we've been a couple of years behind. So our small ball community, the baseball, softball, lacrosse, those people have really, really benefited. And so, and you can see it in just the opportunity for kids to go out and play. So we look at the economy and we look at all the good things it can do, and we can have tournaments and all those kind of things to bring people to town. But for me, the real rubber meets the road as I drive through there and I see 100 kids out playing where they weren't being able to play for months. So to me, that's the really the winning.
We're just getting our numbers right now because we're coming to the end of our first full year, 12-month year, using the new field surface at War Memorial Field. And when we look at our individual user units, so how many are on the field for a game, how many are on the field for practice, literally our individual user units is up by thousands over prior years. That's the kind of impact that a new surface that really is considering our climate, but then also considering a multitude of users. Those are the kind of changes that we can really make for our community. And the majority of those users are kids who are living and families living within city limits, but then it also is kind of our greater Sandpoint surrounding area as well. It's not the tourists who are using that. It's kind of the greater Sandpoint area.
Yeah, it's so important for the active lifestyle here that most folks cherish. And it's an exciting time for the city with lots of projects and forethoughtful plans. And it may seem intuitive, but were there any specific trigger points that led to the decision to hire a planning manager at this time, to hire someone like Maeve and then Maeve?
So when we finished our Parks and Rec Master Plan and adopted that late summer in 2020, as we were moving into our budgeting process for what's our fiscal year 2021, which started October of 2020, we looked at how are we going to move forward and how are we going to implement and construct what's envisioned in this plan. And it was at that time we made the determination that we needed to do what so many other cities and jurisdictions who are really making a lot of parks improvement, open space improvement and things happen, and hire a parks planning and development manager. So that's really when it came about. I think we posted the position actually about this time in 2020. And it took us a good almost full 12 months to have someone like Maeve come along and know she's the perfect fit for Sandpoint. We needed somebody that fit our culture, our community, but had experience in planning and constructing the specific amenities that we have in our Parks and Recreation Master Plan. And they're many and they're varied. And so whether it's open space and open dirt trails to, potentially a skating facility, a skate park, a pickleball, tennis facilities, marinas, we're really broad in our recreation here, and we needed a really special person that had that broad background and expertise and ultimately the passion for what we're doing and the passion for this community vision.
Yes, I remember this very well, and Kim will remember as well, because I've been pestering him to schedule an interview with the new parks planner since last January, maybe, Kim?
Yeah.
And you kept telling me we didn't quite have the person yet. So we're so happy to have you here.
And I have to say, it's not for a lack of candidates. I can tell you we probably had 100 applications for this position. But we were looking for the right fit, and we're prepared to keep the position open as long as needed to get the right person into it. It's too important for what we're trying to accomplish. So it had to be Maeve. The position was open for her. We knew immediately she was the right fit for this position. So it took us that long with the community saying, I thought you were adding a position, and we were trying, but we had to have the right person so that we could deliver. One of the things I think we're most proud of is What we've demonstrated to the community, it's not just a matter of doing plans and the plans sit on the shelf. It's a matter of doing a plan that contains an implementation strategy in it and then moving forward and implementing. And our team here across the city is really proud with the fact that we deliver what we say on time, under budget, and get things moving forward, not just be dreaming about what we might do someday.
So as a new position, a lot of the things that Maeve's doing then are either as a result of the growth and evolution of the program, new needs, or how were the duties she's handling previously split up between you and Kim and the rest of the staff?
Well, that's a good question. I would say our approach with parks is consistent with the approach that we have had in another one of our divisions, our Infrastructure Development Services Division. And you saw the change of that approach specifically with the Downtown Revitalization Project. It is typical for cities to contract out all their design work and to contract out their construction work. And through strategic planning with the mayor, the city council, across our leadership team, we've decided that we are going to implement a different model here, and we're bringing that work in-house because the community, ultimately they expect delivery, ultimately their engagement is with the city. It is not with an outside contractor, and an outside contractor does not know our city better than we know the city ourselves. So we have been very intentional about getting outside of our city walls, engaging with the community and delivering what the community wants, including during the construction period, having conversations about how it's going, how it's impacting in the community. And a contractor, no matter how good they are, they don't have that level of care and ownership with the community. We should be accountable. And it's proven very well to be a cheaper way of doing things. So one thing I may probably hasn't mentioned in this interview, she has a background in landscape architecture. So we can hire an outside landscape architect or do a lot of our drawings and have a lot of that knowledge in-house. And we find it is cheaper and more effective for us to have it in-house and then deliver on it. And it speeds up the timeline too.
And she lives here and she owns it and she's part of it. I think that's the big part. And I just want to say one more plug for Maeve is we truly could not have found a better fit for our town, for our values, for someone that I can work with and Jennifer and part of our team and enthusiasm. She's cause driven. And I couldn't be more pleased with the direction that we're going. I really want to thank Jennifer for, providing not just the plan, but now the tools to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would foresee that the continuity of design implementation and design itself might be improved and, shape a city of Sandpoint in just a nicer way.
Mm-hmm. I think there's probably truth to the rumor then that she was hired because of her moose wrangling capability. Is that right?
Moose wrangling. Well, she did brag to us she had those capabilities as well. But I think the other thing of note is as we've gone through our downtown planning in the past years too, there has been much conversation about how we're going to treat our downtown as a park. And so having this position on staff allows us the ability to not only implement the parks and open space plans, projects, but also to integrate the view and the thinking about parks and open space into every aspect of what we do as a city. So we can't think about downtown as a park and treat downtown as a park if somebody isn't at the table representing the park's view on that.
Yes, absolutely. So many things going on that we've condensed here into just a short bit of time. Maeve, you're on the ground, you've hit it running. What are your top two or three priorities? What are you looking at right now as having some immediate impact on?
Sure. Well, actually, that's a great segue to what my next task is in the next few hours. Is I'm going to be working directly with the skateboard community, but I'm not just focused on skateboarding. I'm focused on a particular park, and it's over by Traverse Park. There's an existing skateboard park over there that has been allotted funding from this current fiscal budget. We have $95,000 allotted right now to begin a project that's a renovation project. And in the master plan, we identified that it would be a potential build out up to 18,000 square feet. And so this coming weekend on Saturday is this big skateboard competition, and I'll be actually out there meeting with the kids and the neighbors. And then the next step after that will be to reach out to the neighbors in that area. And across the street from this particular park, we have a school as well as a senior assisted care facility. And I like to not just think about the park project itself. I like to take a bigger perspective and step out and see who else that this facility might be touching, and not just think of the term of the definition of a skateboard park, but think of it outside of the box and think from an inclusive perspective. And how can other users besides people with wheels use that park facility? And I think of the seniors going to that park, and how when you bring seniors to an area where children are and vice versa, you create a richer, more dynamic, inclusive neighborhood and community. And so I'm a huge fan of bringing in diversity of all types, whether it's diversity of different socioeconomic backgrounds or people of different ages. I really believe in equitable park development and looking at that, and then really getting out there at the onset of this design development and working with those particular neighbors and hearing what they want, what can we do to better serve them, and how can we better facilitate this redevelopment of the existing skateboard park. So that's our my first task, and we're moving forward with several others. I think Jennifer has a few things to share in that regard.
I would be remiss if I did not add into this discussion, we have budgeted, as Maeve mentioned, we have $95,000 budgeted in this next year's budget for the skate park. We also have a leftover or allocated grant funding to add additional moorage and improvements at the War Memorial boat launch. We've been treating our parks as phased projects, which allows us to accomplish more, and it allows us to leverage outside funding for the projects as well. And just in the last 2 weeks, City Council voted to put a local option sales tax before voters again on the ballot this fall. And that is going to enable us to complete those future phases and ultimately what is proposed in the park's concepts and some improvements to our sidewalks. So while we have $95,000 budgeted for the skate park, and we are partnering with the Bonner County Skate Park Association and they're seeking contributions to expand resources for the skate park, at the end of the day, it's probably more about a $300,000 to $350,000 project. And that's where the local option sales tax is a really important element to being able to make those improvements to our park that the community wants and needs.
Yeah, good to hear that. Jennifer, while we still have you on the interview, what are the main funding mechanisms for our parks and recs here in Sandpoint? And is the county a contributor?
So the county itself is not, which is that's again where local option sales tax comes in. So primarily our funding for our park system, it's coming from our property taxes. There's a percentage of our property taxes that are taken off right at the front end for recreation. And then otherwise, it is our general fund property tax paying for parks improvements. And parks improvements are competing with street needs, competing with sidewalk needs, competing with public safety services and all the other general services that are provided by government. So having a dedicated funding source really enables us to make the parks projects move forward, but not at the expense of other community priorities and needs. We also have a Parks Capital Improvement Fund, and that fund, primarily the revenue sources come from recreational users. And I would note with that, the majority of those funds actually come from revenues from boat moorage at our city-owned marinas. So City Beach Marina and Windbag Marina. And so when we think about parks capital improvements and lot tax and leveraging a local option sales tax to fund those improvements, it also creates ongoing revenue sources for maintaining and future improvements of those parks. So our marinas alone generate over $250,000 in funding per year for our park system. So it's significant, and it's envisioned in the City Beach Master Plan to expand upon those marinas. And there is a great demand for more boat moorage. There was no boat moorage available on the lake this year, and we had a long, long waiting list. And the majority of our boat moorage customers are City of Sandpoint residents, and then we start bleeding out again into Greater Sandpoint. But the point being, they're local. And so when we make capital improvements can also generate funding sources to support the overall park system, including improvements to playgrounds and other amenities in other parks. So that is really important. We also have a impact fee for new development. New development has to pay based on the value of the new construction. They have to pay an incremental amount into a capital improvement fund for acquisition of parks and other capital improvements. So, you know, it's new development needs to contribute to their impacts on the community. And when we look at user fees like moorage, or we look at a local option tax, we are looking at users of our system contributing to the system and not just property taxpayers in city limits.
Sure. And while we're talking about that impact fee, I think it's been in the paper and talked about recently that Sandpoint is a little bit short in terms of its amount of open space and park space, and you're all working on that, as I understand it. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, there's a vision in our parks plan based on, again, what were the population estimates at the time, and we are constantly having to track this, but that the city would need to either acquire or through partnerships add an additional at least 14 acres into the park system within the next 10 years. And another priority within that parks plan was the kind of one of the top priorities that came out through that and even our most recent survey is the public wants more public access, public protected access to waterfront and the water. And so having those funds set aside and really looking for those opportunities where we can extend our green belt and our connectivity along the waterfront. And we have great connection opportunities moving forward along Sand Creek in particular. So Maeve can talk a little bit more about that, but then there's also other opportunities like the Baldy property where currently we have, we've got the user group, the disc golf course using that, but that's space that could potentially be used for a number of other things, a dog park, open space, additional fields, trail connectivity, a lot of other things as well. And as the city grows, you know, we have to think big picture, 30, 40 years into the future, you know, that park area that is on the edge of town and across the tracks could be right in the middle of town.
It's so important to think long range, especially the acquisitions while they're still available. I'm wondering about the survey, though. Did it turn out any other interesting results, things you weren't expecting, or does it showcase any trends in how usage patterns or interests are changing or shifting or at least directing themselves?
I don't think that we necessarily saw anything new in that survey, and that was remarkably different from the surveys. And a reminder that we did a resident survey as part of the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, and it was a statistically representative significant survey of the City of Sandpoint residents. But we opened up electronically to kind of our greater Sandpoint community, even outside. What's remarkable is the values around parks and open space and amenities within city limits are the same values, and the priorities stayed the same, even when we're having respondents participate outside of city limits. And I think it's notable how many respondents we have who are outside city limits that feel they have a voice and want to share an opinion about our parks and open space within city limits. It really shows how important and the use is and just the passion for our parks. So again, they're users, and we need to talk about that. The last round of survey that we did leading into the local option tax was really more so about verifying what we thought we've heard, as opposed to looking for something new that we haven't asked for. The looking for something new or what have we missed is what's going to be happening here in the next couple of weeks as we begin community workshops with Maeve kind of leading those efforts, because what we have are parks concepts. Now it's the real vetting of, as we move into design and phasing, have we got these concepts right? What fine tuning needs to occur? Where are there priorities that we should be thinking of one thing over another? So that work is to begin. So I would say we've had a ton of community engagement, and stay tuned and be involved, because we need a lot more as we get moving forward.
Well, this is wonderful to hear. And it's also wonderful that we have an individual working directly for the city who will help shape and help residents participate in all of this actual implementation of what is currently concept. So as we come to an end, Phil, what are we missing? Any other questions?
Oh, there are so many things we could talk about. I think if Maeve, you are able and willing, the future looks very bright in regards to the potential for some of the Sand Creek area. And I know that's a lot to cleave off in just 2 or 3 minutes, but maybe give us a thumbnail sketch of a really bright future.
Absolutely. Well, my biggest takeaway of moving here is, number one, I'm a user myself, and myself and my family, and we enjoy the outdoors just as much as anyone. And I gravitate to the Sand Creek area just as much as I do the mountains. And I see that as the green belt, the future green belt, the open space connection all the way to the Schweitzer watershed. And the city, we do own the watershed of the Sand Creek area, and we own that property. And as you know, the bike community has been building a lot of trails in there, but that watershed area right now is going to be getting a recreation master plan, and we're going to kick that off this fall. And so I see that and the Sand Creek downtown waterfront as two of the great gems of this beautiful golden necklace that is our front door to the rest of Idaho. I see people coming, traveling north and south. The minute that the borders open up to Canada, the highway is just filled with people. And I imagine, what would it be like if people pulled off the highway there and spent one more hour, just one more hour in Sand Creek? What would that do to the economy? What would that do to the resources? How can I, as a steward of the land, protect those natural resources, well as design them so that our community is benefiting the most from the designs that we implement? So with that, like you heard about the skateboard park, one of the first things I'll be doing is each of these projects will involve community outreach. And community outreach during COVID looks a little different than it did 2 years ago when they did the master plan. There will not likely be meetings indoors. Most likely, what I'm formulating right now is a walking series of outreach where I'll actually be hosting a whole bunch of scheduled meet and greets where we're going to meet out in the park, or we're going to meet in the trails, or we're going to go take kayaks and go down Sand Creek. And we're actually going to interface with this public property. And I'm going to capture people's ideas that way and make sure that the designs, once we take that concept and we roll it into an actual design, and then I can go out to construction. Those designs are based on the priorities that we're talking about when we're actually out there. So yeah, look forward to that outreach plan. Each project right now, I'm developing a plan for that and a template for how we can implement this. And just stay tuned. I'm really excited to be part of this community.
It is
very humbling.
Well, Maeve, I've got to say that I'm excited to hear your excitement and your dream for a beautiful connection between the city and the wilderness that is Schweitzer and everything in the mountains from there. So it's great to hear that. And the other takeaway, Phil, and then I'll let you conclude, but is for our listeners to listen, as Maeve is saying, get involved, because when the rubber meets the road, if you don't join in, your ideas and thoughts about what is important to you for the city won't be heard. So listeners, join in when Maeve is out there.
It's so true. All these things. Democracy is a participatory event, not just at election time, but make your voices and selections known through surveys. And it's a small town just through contacting our officials. And welcome to the community, Maeve. There's so much more we can talk about. And if ever you or Kim or Jennifer want to come back on the show, we're more than happy to entertain that. I know, especially if you talk about pickleball, Julie will schedule you the next available opening.
I'm happy that we weren't able to talk pickleball, guys, but that will have to come next time.
That is. We will update you on pickleball when we roll that out. That is on my list, though. Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking with you.
Thank you. And thank you, Kim, for joining us. And thank Jennifer. And once again, you've been listening to Community Conversations on KRFY. You can listen to it live streaming at krfy.org at 88.5 FM on Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Or if you missed any of this or simply want to hear it all again, you can go to the website and listen to the podcast. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.